Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and hey, you're going to need to put your thinking caps on, and by the time we're finished with our guest today, you're going to have a whole different perspective regarding the thinking process itself. I'd like to welcome to the airwaves Tim Herson and his wonderful book, An Innovator's Guide to Productive Thinking. His book is titled Think Better.
Hey, Donna, it's a pleasure to be here.
Hi, Tim. Hi. It's a delight having you. Where are you calling in from today?
Well, you know, I travel so much doing speaking. I'm calling right now from Toronto, Canada.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, my goodness. I'm so delighted you've been able to give us some of your time with your very hectic special schedule. You are a founding partner of ThinkX Intellectual Capital. It's a firm that provides global corporations with training, facilitation, and consultation in productive thinking and innovation. You're a faculty member and trustee of the Creative Education Foundation and a founding director of Facilitators Without Borders. You're quite an interesting man because your background has included being a script writer on documentary films. You are a man that has walked a very unique path, and creativity has been very much a part of your life. Why do you think you have been able to evolve into such a different format of thinking than many of your peers?
Well, creativity has been a really significant part of my life. And one of the motivating things for me started, maybe about 20 years ago. In the early days of the web, you know, we used to have these chat rooms, some people might remember, and there was a bunch of folks who got together and who were all involved in the advertising business in one way or another, as I was, and creative directors and the like, and a debate began to brew among those people about whether or not creativity was an innate, God-given talent, and if you know, either you had it or you didn't, or whether you could actually learn it, whether you could develop a skill in being more creative. And, you know, God might have given you that too, but could you develop it? And I was on the side of you could learn this stuff. This was stuff that anybody could learn. And there were a whole bunch of people who said, no, either you have it or you don't. And I started doing some research at that time and discovered very happily that, yeah, this was something that you could learn. It was a skill that you could actually teach people. And to me, that was incredibly exciting because what it meant was that it didn't matter what kind of equipment you started with. You could start with a Volkswagen or a Rolls Royce. No matter what it was, you could get better at being creative, at thinking more effectively and thinking more productively. And that was really the beginning, the genesis of my work in this area.
Now, you started off, which I thought was just absolutely wonderful. I love the illustration of a caterpillar. I just absolutely loved that. In fact, I took my little highlighter and colored them like a two-year-old would color. Because here are these little caterpillars. There's a portion of one, and then one, two, three, four, five little caterpillars that are crawling across the floor and up the side of a pot. And you have a quote right at the beginning. It says, imagination is the beginning of creation. You imagine what you desire. You will what you imagine. And at last, you create what you will. And that was by George Bernard Shaw. These little critters that you use right in the beginning of the book, why did you choose them to begin the illustrative thought that you're trying to bring across in this book?
Well, Donna, it's a fascinating story. You know, I think there's an enormous amount that you can learn from the animal kingdom. And as you know, I use animal stories and animal analogies a fair bit, particularly in the beginning of the book. In the late 1800s, I think it was 1896, there was a French naturalist, a scientist, whose name was Jean-Henri Favre. And Favre was working with various kinds of critters who were in France at the time. And one of them is a little caterpillar called the processionary or processional caterpillar. And it's called the processionary caterpillar because, kind of like elephants in a circle, they have this behavior of marching across the forest head to tail, head to tail, head to tail, head to tail, just like elephants in a circus. And this is the way they go through the forest foraging for their food. And what happens is that the lead caterpillar is looking for a particular kind of food, and they only eat a certain kind of pine needle. And every once in a while, he or she, I don't know if they have genders, raises his head and looks around and sniffs or whatever they do, and then keeps going. And if that beginning caterpillar, that lead caterpillar, gets knocked off for some reason, the rest of the line doesn't bother them. The next one becomes the leader, and on they go. And one day, Favre decided to do a little experiment. What he wondered, what would happen if he kind of coaxed those caterpillars up to the side of the flower pot, and that's the illustration that you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
and kind of manipulated them so that they were started a circle on the top of the flower pot. In other words, they got to the top, and he kind of nudged them around so that they were marching along the edge of the flower pot. And then when just enough caterpillars got up so that they could form a circle, he kind of knocked off the tail end of the train of caterpillars, so that the lead caterpillar now attached itself to the last caterpillar. And they formed a complete circle and were marching around this flower pot in a circle. And there's no leader anymore. And what he discovered was that even though he put their favorite food, this pine needle, 8 inches from the circle, in other words, inside the circle, these caterpillars marched around mindlessly for 5 full days, day and night, within 8 inches of their food, with no sleep, no food, until some of them literally began to collapse. And when they collapsed, the circle broke, and it was the only thing that caused the remaining caterpillars to be able to survive, because once the circle broke, they could then find the food. And it's astonishing to me how much that is like the kinds of lives that so many of us live, that we simply march around following the patterns that we have over and over and over again. And sometimes the right answer, the pot of gold, is the equivalent of 8 inches from us, but we literally do not, cannot see it. It's an amazing story.
It really is. It's a fabulous story. You talk in your book right at the beginning how genius is simply a talent for seeing the obvious. And how often, if someone is going through a situation, will say, well, I can see this, I can see that, that may or may not be correct. But when we are standing apart from ourselves and looking at someone else, we might be able to make a fairly good judgment. But I think that caterpillar strategy and thinking or non-thinking is also there. So genius is simply a talent for seeing the obvious. I mean, we think of people like the guy that found out about Velcro just by observing nature. That's fine. How can we learn to do this? You talk about monkey mind, gator mind,
yeah,
and the elephant's tether. Okay, give us a clue.
Donna, you bring up, I think, probably the central issue of how people can think better. There was a 6th century B.C. philosopher by the name of Heraclitus, and he said one of the most astonishing quotes that I think I've ever read. He said, the unexpected connection is more powerful than one that is obvious. And I think what he meant by that was that, you know, there's absolutely nothing new in the universe. There's absolutely nothing new. What there is new ways of seeing old things. And when we allow ourselves to find and train ourselves to find ways to see old things in with new eyes, we can suddenly invent, create, recreate the world in which we live. And so much of the creative and productive thinking process is exactly about finding those unexpected connections. You know, everybody knows the story of Archimedes sitting in his bathtub, and you know the king has given him a challenge to find out if my crown is of pure gold or whether I've been cheated by the manufacturer of the crown. And Archimedes is sitting in his bathtub, and as he's moving around, he sees the water going up and down a little bit, and he has immediately this flash of a connection. He says, whoa, if my body displaces water, maybe different densities of metal can displace water in the same kind of way, and I can just figure out exactly whether there is that crown is made of pure gold. And he jumps out of the bathtub and he yells, "Eureka, Eureka!" Unexpected connection. You know, we have these unexpected connections all the time. One of the most fabulous ones happened in 1921. A 14-year-old farm boy with the wonderful name of Philo T. Farnsworth, if you can believe that, or not, Philo T. Farnsworth, is watching his dad plow fields in his home in Idaho, and the tractor is going across the fields, you know, back and forth, and this 14-year-old kid has this stunning, unexpected connection. He says, "Whoa! If you can plow fields that way, I wonder if you could scan a photograph like that and then reproduce it." Now, what a crazy connection that is. But 7 years later, a 21-year-old Philo T. Farnsworth builds and demonstrates the first television set based on exactly that same principle of a scanning pictures back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So these unexpected connections are incredibly powerful if we allow ourselves, exactly as you said earlier, to see them.
Creative thinking, you feel, has three essential characteristics. What are they?
Well, I think one of the things that you have to do is see those unexpected connections. So there's a way of doing that. One of them is to dispense with judgment. You know, what happens is that we tend to come up with ideas, and before we've even finished articulating them to ourselves, we're judging them. We're saying, "Oh, that's no good," or "That won't work for me," or "That'll be too expensive." And anybody who's sat in a brainstorming session knows that feeling. You know, somebody comes up with an idea, and everybody pounces on it and says, "Nah, that's a horrible idea." One of the things that you have to do is you have to literally stop judging, not forever, but just for a little while, so that you can get the ideas out, so that they can live. So that the first essential criterion is something I call separate your thinking. What you have to do is you have to separate the creative component of your thinking, which is that, wouldn't it be a great idea if, wouldn't it be a great idea if, wouldn't it be a great idea if, from the critical component of your thinking, which is equally important, but you have to just let that one go for a little while until at least you can get the ideas out. You know, kids, when they're creative, what they do is they hurl their ideas out into the universe. Anyone who's had a kid knows this. They don't, you know, analyze ideas and think about them and unpack them. They say, I got an idea. They're throwing them out into the universe. So that's what you've got to do. You've got to take that judgment and separate it just enough so that you can throw the ideas out into the universe and give them at least a moment to breathe, right, before you start judging them. So that's one of the most critical things. The other thing that you have to do is you have to get to what I call the third third. Now, this is a great concept. Anybody who's been in a brainstorming session knows that brainstorming is kind of like cholesterol. There's good brainstorming and there's bad brainstorming. And most of us have only experienced the bad. And the bad goes something like this. How about we do this? No, that's too expensive. How about we do this? No, the boss won't like it. How about we do this? No. How about we try this? Oh, that might work. Meeting over. Everybody's had that experience. So what we do is we just get that first right idea, and we're so uncomfortable with being unresolved, with not having an answer, that we jump on that first right idea as though it's the only right idea. And it's not. In fact, the first right idea is probably the worst right idea. There's a second right idea, and a third, and a fourth, and a fifth, and maybe even a hundredth right idea. And studies tell us that in good brainstorming sessions, it's the last part of the session, in other words, the third of the session, where the real exciting stuff comes. The first third of the session, those aren't even ideas at all. Those are things that we remember from the past. You know, those are those patterns that we follow over and over again. And only when we break away from those, when we're forced to break away from those, do we come up with the really exciting ideas that ultimately are the fodder, the front end of innovation, of creative thinking, of creative living. So you got to get to that third, critically, critically important.
Right. Now, my guest today, for those of you just tuning in, is Tim Herson. We're talking about his book, Think Better, Your Company's Future Depends on It, and So Does Yours. Now, Tim, what I really liked about your book is that anyone could benefit from this. This is a wonderful book to read, let's say for a parent that has growing kids, because this is something that if you can implement this with your kids when they're young, then they're going to be able to really develop that creative side, regardless of what may be going on in a particular classroom environment, et cetera. You're going to be encouraging that creativity within them. One of the particular perspectives you bring up is asking questions. And you say, stay in the questions for a long time. And when you were telling your last points there, it brought to mind an image of a police detective. And when they're working on a case, they need to be able to do what you were just describing about. They need to be able to put everything out on the table. Could we have missed something? What are we looking for? And it is the combination of variables that maybe will give them their big aha where they can crack a case. So in a way, you have to be a detective.
Boy, are you ever right. And thank you so much, Donna, for mentioning that this is something that anyone can use, and particularly in children and in families. You know, I wrote this book originally for business, and a lot of the work that I do is business-related. But among the very, very best pieces of feedback I've gotten, you know, I get emails from people who've written the book or even letters, believe it or not, people actually write letters still, from people who've read the book, and they say, and they go something like this. They say, you know, I've read your book, and it's really interesting, and I can see how I can apply it to my business. But the thing that I really wanted to tell you is that my child, who is in the seventh grade, was having some issues at school, and we used the process to come up with X number of things that we could do to help him or her at school. I could not get better, more exciting, more constructive feedback than that. This is a skill that is not a skill for business people. It's not a skill for scientists. It's not a skill for teachers. It's a skill for everyone. Everyone can benefit by thinking better, by thinking more creatively. You know, one of the stories I tell, Donna, and you know, I know that I tend to go on, so if I do, please stop me. But one of the stories that has tremendous meaning for me, a friend of mine is a consultant for school systems throughout the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And one day he was being given a tour of a school by the principal in preparation for some work that he was going to do. And the principal and this fellow came upon two boys fighting in the hallway by the boys' locker. And one of the kids was, you know, wailing on the other kid, bang, 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 and the other kid was sort of defending himself. And the principal goes up to the two kids and grabs him by the collar and, you know, marches him into his office and sits him down and calms him down and turns eventually to the aggressor, and he says, Brian, why were you hitting Bobby like that? The kid looks up at the principal, and he says, because I couldn't think of anything else to do. Wow, because I couldn't think of anything else to do. When I heard my friend tell me this story, I thought to myself, imagine all of the pain, imagine all of the problems that we get into in our personal lives, in our business lives, in our community lives, because we do things simply because we can't think of other things to do.
Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't it be great if you could just give people options to think of more things to do so that they could just then choose from those options? Wouldn't it be likely that if you gave them more options, they would make better choices? And I think the answer is an incontrovertible yes. Absolutely they would. You talked about kids before. What a parent, any parent who's listening to this show, what do they want for their kids? Well, of course they want them to be safe and healthy. But after that, they want them to have choices. They want them to be able to open as many doors as they possibly can so that they can live the lives that, live out the potential of their lives that's there. So opening doors, having choices, it's a natural part of human nature. And yet when it comes to ourselves, we don't. We jump on that first right answer. We jump on that, I couldn't think of anything else to do. We operate according to those patterns, just like those caterpillars that we talked about earlier, and we don't go beyond those patterns. And I think that's tragic.
But I think many times there are environments that people are brought into and they're born into or brought into that people will say, this is it. I think of a situation I was in. This is really corny. But this just happened a week ago. And my husband and I were invited to a social event. They had a band there that your ears, if you were lucky, if you walked out with your hearing. And the music was atrocious. The band was appalling. And this apparently had happened before. And I talked to someone that invited us, and they apologized terribly about this. I said, excuse me. Who's doing the interviewing? There's a lot of bands in the area. Why is it that they chose this one? They didn't have an answer. But what they found was that the people that were playing weren't paying any attention to the audience's needs. The people that had hired them were totally ignoring everything that was going on. And they were just stuck in this situation, and they wondered why everybody left. And you go, excuse me, isn't it obvious? Nobody could hear, number one. Their ears were ringing probably for 2 days, like mine did. And number two, nobody was paying attention. The right people were not paying attention to the individuals that were supporting this event. And so they walked out. You get into these patternings, and it almost takes like a bomb to go off, but sometimes there's not even a bomb to go off, and things are destroyed. Nothing ever happens. Let's talk about productive thinking by design. You have a chapter on this. And I know we've only got a few minutes here, but I want to get as much in as I can. You talk about, I believe, six steps regarding the productive thinking by design. Let's address that a little bit.
Sure. Well, step number one, I got to tell you that I don't use academic terminology, and a lot of this work was the research is academic, but I find the academic terminology is off-putting. It doesn't work. So the steps have very simple names. The first step is called what's going on. Real simple, what's going on? You know, there's no way that you can come up with a good response to an issue unless you know what's really going on. There's something that I call the great answer, wrong question syndrome. And what that means is that often we come up with a great answer, what we think is a great answer, and we try to apply this solution to some issue that we have or some problem. Nothing changes. And one of the reasons is, not the only reason, but one of the reasons is sometimes we've come up with a great answer, but we've actually been asking the wrong question.
Mm-hmm.
So the very first stage is to figure out what's going on so that we can begin to ask that or those good questions, those right questions. So we turn over the puzzle pieces. We look under the rocks. We try to figure out what the causes of the issues are. And we try to really understand what the nature of the problem is. Now, a lot of people have difficulty with that because they say, I know what the issue is. And then they start working on solutions. But if you don't take the time to go into real depth on figuring out what the problem is, you're just going to be spinning your wheels. You know, you're kind of like a great baseball player. A great batter, who's got a wonderful swing but can't see the ball. So he mm-hmm. swings the most powerful swing in the world, but he never connects with the ball because he's not seeing it properly. It's the same kind of thing when you don't see your problem correctly. So number one is what's going on. Number two, very simple, what's success? What does success look like? What does it feel like? You know, there's something that I sometimes call the gravitational pull of the past. And everybody who's ever tried to make a change, particularly in organizations, knows this. You try to make a change, that gravity of the past pulls you back. You try to make a change, the gravity of the past pulls you back. It could be in your family, in an organization. Same thing. So what you need to do is you need to have some vision of a future which is so powerful, so compelling, that it literally forces you, compels you to want to get there. And the analogy that I like to use here is it's almost as though you have this grappling hook that you take and you throw into this wonderful future that you've envisioned. It's not the answer to your problem yet, but what it is, it's a future in which your problem has been answered. You throw that grappling hook into the future, and it latches on to that wonderful vision, and it allows you to pull yourself towards it. And it creates something called future pull, which overcomes that gravitational pull of the past. So what's success is the second step. Third step, now that we've figured out what's going on and we've got some sense of where we want to get to, now we say, what's the question? What is the real question or the set of questions that we have to answer? And if we answer those, we're going to get to that wonderful future that we've described. And we do just as much brainstorming, Donna, just as much in finding the right question as we do finding the right answer. In fact, sometimes we do even more brainstorming on finding the right question because it's so important. It's so important. What we're looking for is that question. I sometimes call it the catalytic question. You know, like in chemistry, there's this thing called a catalytic agent, and when you add this agent to something, everything starts happening. You know, the chemical reactions start happening. Well, that's what you're looking for. It's kind of like when you've got that big, horrible knot that your kid comes home from school with, and you pick and you pick and you pick, you know, in the shoelace or something, and you pick and you pick and nothing happens. And finally, you find that one thread of the knot, that one piece of string, and when you pull that, the whole knot starts to get looser and loosen up. That's the catalytic question. That's what you're looking for, that special part, that special piece of string that when you pull it, everything starts to change. Fourth step of the process is generate answers. Now that we've got some good questions, let's generate some answers against them. And we generate lots and lots and lots and lots of answers. I talked about the third before. We just go for it. You know, we go crazy. We go wild because we know that it's at that last part where all the interesting stuff really happens. The fifth step is something called forge the solution. And this is a real important one. And the reason it's important is that often, you know, we'll come up with, you know, a dozen ideas, 20 ideas, however many ideas, and we'll pick one or two or three that are worth pursuing. And often, when we judge them, normally, we'll do what I call a binary judgment, yes, no, a good, bad, in, out. And if you just judge things as binary, good or bad, yes or no, in or out, you're not really milking the potential of an idea. So in Forge the Solution, what we do is we do something called generative judgment. And then there's a particular tool that we use called Power. And that tool allows you to judge an idea, and while you're judging it, it's actually getting better. In other words, as you're judging it, you're generating new, better, more interesting perspectives on that idea. So a very powerful and important part, you forge the solution, just like a blacksmith uses a forge to make the metal that he or she is working with stronger or more supple or whatever. And then the final step, the sixth step, is called align resources. Once we know what the solution should look like after having gone through that forge, what resources do we need to be able to put it in place? Who do we need? What kind of time? What kinds of money? What kinds of energy? What kinds of knowledge? What kinds of deadlines do we need in order to create a workable plan to bring our idea into solution? And that's it. Six steps. And it's, you know, when I say it verbally, it probably might sound a little complex for people, but as you go through these six steps, they really become quite self-evident. And boy, oh boy, is it powerful to go through this. One of the cool things about this, Donna, is that we're talking about a process that is a repeatable discipline that allows you to think creatively. You know, some people think creativity is, you know, all airy, fairy, blue sky. You know, some people have it, as I said earlier, some people don't. It's not. If you go through this process, this disciplined process, every single person, every single one of us can be more creative, more productive, can have more ideas, better ideas, more of the time. It's amazing to see.
Tim Herson has been our guest. Think Better is the name of his book. It's an innovator's guide to productive thinking. It's great no matter who you are, no matter what your position is. It empowers you to be able to use your mind and mental processes differently. You don't need to be stuck in a box. You can make and design your own box if you so desire, or a whole slew of them. And Make sure you put lots of windows in them while you're doing it. This is Donna Sebo. Tim, what is it that is your website? What is the address?
Website is, there are a couple. One is called ThinkX. You used the company name before. ThinkXIC, as in intellectual capital. So the letters XIC, thinkxic.com. And the other one is my own. It's called Tim Hurson, TimHurson.com. And both of them will direct you to the book. And both of them have information on them about how to use the process. You don't even have to buy the book. There's stuff on the website that can help people.
Well, you can't beat that. So if you want, go to thinkxic.com or TimHurson.com. Tim, it's been a delight having you as a guest. Thank you so much, and keep up the good work.
Donna, great pleasure, and thank you so much for having me.
It's been my delight. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Don't go away. We're going to be right back.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous.
Hello, this is
TTAP.
Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyMD.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on bbsradio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you. Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyMD.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on bbsradio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Would you like to know the real...
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open. If you would like to chat with me, if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, here are the telephone numbers to call into, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have 530-876-3222. Now, if you are a first-time listener to the show, we're so delighted you're able to join our listening family. And remember, if you'd like to call in, this is your first time, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. Of course, I've always liked to find out where you're calling in from. And then after that, just let me do my thing. I'm an information resource, and I'll be then opening up the opportunity for you to ask a question after I finish my perceptions. Now, I do want to remind those of you in the state of Washington, this coming April 19th, which is a Saturday, from 10 a.m. until 2 in the afternoon, I'm going to be presenting a class. And I don't often have this opportunity, and part of the funds for this are going to be going towards the restoration of a historic building. And this is going to be Mental Ecology, Beauty, Style, and Greatness from the Inside Out. That's what this is going to be all about. And the cost for the class is $89, and that's going to include a catered lunch. And if you want to make a reservation, it's going to be at 206 North J Street in downtown Tacoma. The telephone number to call in to is 253-383-3151. We're going to talk about your personal vision, developing intuitive skills, problem solving. We're going to help you get clarity about your perspectives, your objectives, and your life purpose. So we got a lot to share with you, and I'm really looking forward to this because I love to teach, and this is my opportunity to do so. And it's helping to go towards something that's very special, too, preserving a historical building that's 100 years old this year. This is Donna Sebo. Welcome to the show. We've got a caller waiting. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Tacoma, Washington.
Hey, that's great. I was just talking about the class. I hope you can come.
Yeah. I noticed that when I was listening.
Okay, dear. First name or initial, please.
I'm sorry. Would you repeat that?
Yeah. What's your first name or initial?
My name's Roberta.
Okay. Now, Roberta, the first thing that I am aware of right off the bat is that you must mark time. Now, when I'm saying that, it's like soldiers marking time. You've got to keep your pace of activity, action, involvement, whatever terminology you want to use. You have to keep it in a rhythm. If you try to move forward too quickly, you're going to get smacked down. If you slow down too much, you're going to get discouraged. So there needs to be a pace here. It's sort of like going on a diet, and it's something none of us like to do. But if you had to do something like that, it's taking one day at a time, just saying, okay, this is what I do today, and I'll do this, and not even worrying about tomorrow, but just taking one day at a time. And
okay.
I think that is very important. Otherwise, there's going to be a feeling of being overwhelmed. And when I'm looking at this, it would be too easy to drop the ball on whatever it is you're needing to keep a pace about. So I don't want you to do that. I don't want you to not achieve what you want to go for. But you have to remember, not everybody around you is going to be going, yahoo, you know, just keep it up. They may, in fact, say, oh, what a bore. Why are you even bothering? And
okay.
You need to do what you need to do because you know it's the right thing for you to do. Also, you're going to need to pay attention to money. I'd like to see you save as much capital as you possibly can during the next 2 years because it's going to come in handy. There's something very special that you're going to want to do. It may be something so simple as taking a trip, a dream trip, whatever that might be. But I also think there is a very strong interest in leveraging your money so that you have a good return on it. So I want you to be aware, and I want you to educate yourself as much as you can. If you do that, you will be very pleased with your results. Educate yourself as much as you can about money, how to work with it. Go to the library. Pick out books. Just start absorbing information. And I think you're going to find that you're going to make some pretty good judgment calls relative to working with money and cash capital in a very effective way. What question do you have for me today?
You know, I just want to know if there's a future for Tony and I.
Well, with you and Tony, I'd say take it just a bit at a time. Don't try to make anything happen at this time because Tony is going through a lot of shifting. And Tony is asking a lot of questions of the self, and you need to allow that that's all right. If you tried to force anything with Tony or tried to make it an absolute that, boy, we're going to be partners forever, you're going to be disappointed. Tony needs to go through the adjustments necessary for Tony to be able to discover the balance that they have within themselves. There's something that's caused a lot of upheaval, and it keeps stirring things up every once in a while. But it has to be that way at this time because Tony needs to resolve certain fears, and that's going to take some time.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
Yes, absolutely. It made perfect sense to me. I'm surprised.
Well, I'm so glad.
Yes.
That's what I love to do.
Yeah, actually, that was a lot more than what I thought you'd say, so.
Well, I appreciate that feedback, and I hope you can come to my class on the 19th.
I'm going to be looking for it. I'll see if I can get it on my calendar.
Okay, and if you need any information, just give me a call at my office.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
It's my pleasure, Roberta. You enjoy the sunshine.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that's how simple it is. This is Donna Sebo. Just give me a buzz if you want to chat. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. Well, you've heard me saying over the past couple of weeks that we've been dealing with challenges with our computer system. Well, we're out shopping around and we're looking at all kinds of things, including new keyboards. And whenever you're going to make an investment in technology, you always want to find out as much as possible about what you're purchasing so that you're going to be most cost-effective in what you buy. And also, is it going to be user-friendly for you? Now, that may sound a little strange, but a few years back, when I had a particular keyboard, I was having an awful time with my shoulder and my elbow. Well, my husband discovered some keyboards that had slide pads in them. I went to using that instead of a mouse. No more elbow problem, no more shoulder problem, no more wrist problem. It was just wonderful. Well, here we are looking at the new computer systems, and we found that a lot of the keyboards that are out there, they're all with a mouse. And of course, you've got the laser mouse. You've got all kinds of stuff that you can use today for the mice beneath the mouses. But I really wanted to have the slide pad. And you have them on laptops, but getting a keyboard, that's not so easy anymore. So my husband discovered online that there is what they call a rollerball unit that you can use that's not unlike slide pad, but it's a ball and it's in a convenient positioning on the keyboard. Well, I came across this article. The reason I'm bringing this up is because I know the problems that I have when I'm using a mouse, because occasionally I'll be on someone else's system and I'm using their mouse and it will be very uncomfortable for me after a while. Well, I came across some information regarding achy wrists and maybe you get numb fingers when you are using a mouse, and it can be symptomatic of what we know today as carpal tunnel syndrome, CTS. Now, why does this happen? Well, it is because the nerves in the wrist seemingly become compressed. However, because this has become so common with so many people, and of course, surgery is recommended sometimes, it gets so serious, there's all kinds of things that can be done like that. But how about being aware enough where maybe you can give yourself some relief? Now, I know there are those items where you can rest your wrist when you're working with a computer. Also, if you are finding that you have caused some damage and you want to let the body heal itself, what's recommended are some wrist splints. Now, there is a CTS expert, Robert K. Childs, physician. He said you can wear a wrist splint at night so you won't bend your wrist while you're sleeping. And it's a habit that contributes to CTS. Well, just think of it. If you are bending your wrist all the time and you're working on the computer for hours a day, that stress is not going to go away, so the body needs to have a chance to heal itself. He said when you're holding your wrist steady, the splint allows your body's repair mechanisms to work at full speed. And he said you can get it at many different stores. So he said there's one Wellgate for women that he recommends, and men can use it as well. Also, there is an amount of research that has been done regarding nutrition. And B vitamins are so important for maintaining wellness in the body. And they have found in studies that high blood levels of B6 ensure normal nerve function. And it's a key to preventing and healing carpal tunnel syndrome. Now, the recommendation is 250 milligrams of B6 daily. Traction, they find, heals. There is a device called WristRack, WristRack. Now, we're going to take a break, and I'm going to come back, and I'm going to give you some more information about this, because CTS, carpal tunnel syndrome, affects hundreds of thousands of people. So let's do something about it. When we come back, I'll tell you more about WristRack, and also you can give me a call if you so desire at 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. We're taking a break. We're coming right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Now, I was talking to you about carpal tunnel syndrome before we went on break, and about a device called WristRack, W-R-I-S-T-R-A-C. Now, this device apparently lengthens wrist muscles and ligaments. You use it for about 10 minutes, 4 times a day, and they say that people that have carpal tunnel syndrome, they're usually healed within 6 weeks. Now, apparently this is a prescription device. It costs about $350, and that's an ouch, but think of how much it would cost if you decided to have surgery, and sometimes that surgery can be not a pleasant experience. So, they have a website, WristRack.com, that you can go to find out more information. Also, there are antioxidants you can get into, but Mayo Clinic and Harvard researchers say it's not the keyboard that increases the CTS risk. It's your mouse. To prevent your mouse from hurting you, and when they mean that, they mean it by the use of the mouse, you need to remember that when you're using a mouse, you keep your hands open and relaxed, hold it gently with all of your fingers. not just with one, and use your entire arm to move the mouse. If you're like me, you've got it on a pad and you're just moving your hand. You know, it's, your wrist is getting all the motion. It's not the full arm that you're moving. And you want to keep the mouse close to the keyboard. So if you're like me and you've become accustomed to using a slide pad, and I know many of you don't, but I have, using that keyboard, because when we get our new computers, that's what we're going to be looking at, is the keyboard that has the roller ball in it. So we can just use that, and effectively it's very much like the slide pad. Anyway, I just thought I would share that information with you. Also, I want to thank those of you who have been sending me stories and different items to share with the listening audience, and I've got a little bit of it here, so since I have some time, I'll be able to do that. If you want to call me, give me a call at 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Og Mandino made a statement that I really liked. It's a great thought to keep in your head. I just loved his stories. He wrote such wonderful books. I will waste not even a precious second today in anger or hate or jealousy or selfishness. I know that the seeds I sow I will harvest, because every action, good or bad, is always followed by an equal reaction. I will plant only good seeds this day. What a wonderful thought to put into your head. It's so easy to get sidetracked. It's so easy to get caught in mundane attitudes that actually can cause a paralysis, a mental paralysis for you. It's so easy to get stuck. And remember, our guest today was talking about better thinking. How do you shift? Patterns aren't always easy to break. We all have them. Lord knows I'm terribly guilty of certain patterns of thinking, and I have to consciously be present and say, wait a minute, where do I want my thought processes to go? Do I want them to resolve a situation? Do I want to be able to move forward? Am I going to limit myself? Am I going to come from a positioning of fear? Or am I going to come from a positioning of, let's look at something, let's see how we can resolve the situation? It is taking ownership of your mind and your attitudes. And Og Mandino, I think, said it so well. You want to plant the seeds that will develop into the habits of right thinking, not just positive thinking, but sometimes it's analytical thinking. Sometimes it's creative thinking, productive thinking. There's all kinds of terms that we can apply to the thinking process. But it really is making yourself aware of where your mind is going. And again, it is so easy to get stuck in the unpleasant stuff, but it's up to us as individuals to take authority with our thinking and say, I'm in charge of this. We may have a bad situation here. I believe that there is a resolution to it. What are we going to do to resolve it? How are we going to work with it? And I think, again, like our guest said, many times we don't know the questions to ask. And that's often where, when you can interact with someone else, where you can say, I honestly don't know what questions to ask. Maybe someone else will come up with some questions. And then the ball starts rolling. And I feel that that is such a very, very significant part of our lives and our growing as individuals. The willingness to ask questions, the willingness to explore new arenas of thought. You may or may not agree with them, but if you don't grow, if you don't explore, if you're not willing to open your mind to new options and opportunities, you may never know the greatness of what is within you, and also what greatness of opportunity maybe looking you right in the eye and you didn't even have a clue because you weren't open and receptive. Your head's down mentally and you're just not willing to be able to lift it up and to open yourself. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Tomorrow we've got a great guest. We're going to be talking to Micheline Riesley. This isn't the life I ordered. Sound a little familiar? You're not going to want to miss her. We'll talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.